From the Sky News Centre at 6, Buckingham Palace says Prince Philip had a hospital check-up this morning after yesterday's car crash in Norfolk. No injuries of concern were found and he's now back at Sandringham. The Queen's husband, who's 97, was driving a Land Rover when it collided with a Kia carrying two women and a baby flipping onto its side. Wendy Greenstreet drove past a few moments afterwards.
The scene was actually horrible, you know, so you wouldn't actually think that anyone would have got out of that car the way they did. And for him as well, you know, was crazy.
Donald Trump is meeting a senior North Korean official in the White House. The president and Kim Jong-chol are discussing removing nuclear weapons in the country. Earlier, he met US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, also in Washington. Three men who murdered five people in an explosion in a Leicester shop as part of an insurance scam have been jailed for life. They plotted to destroy the supermarket because the business was failing. Theresa May has been speaking with EU Council President Donald Tusk to try to find an end to the Brexit deadlock. The Prime Minister has also held talks with Cabinet members and senior MPs with her Plan B due on Monday. Former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has urged Mrs. May to negotiate a new deal with Brussels after hers was thrown out by MPs. He's also condemned the idea of delaying Brexit.
Rescinding Article 50 now and telling the British public, after all this hoo-ha, that we've abandoned the project of leaving the European Union would be so utterly pathetic.
Ant McPartlin has been reunited with Declan Donnelly on his first day back at work. The pair posted a smiling selfie on their way to auditions for Britain's Got Talent with the caption, "The boys are back in town." Ant's return to TV follows a turbulent 2018, during which he split from his wife and got treatment for prescription drugs and alcohol problems. And 500 sheep have been stolen from a field in Norfolk. Police say the animals were taken on Tuesday night in East Tuddenham. From Sky News, I'm Charlie Max.
On BCFM.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. Tony Gosling helping me review this week's news. It's Labour councillor for Hartcliffe and Withywood, former leader of the council, Helen Holland. People's Republic of Stokes Crofts' Chris Chalkley is here too. And we'll be joined after the 7 o'clock news by a former UN worker in Afghanistan and author, Dr. Lucy Morgan Edwards. After the 7 o'clock news, the detention of Iranian English language TV news anchor Marcia Hashimi in the United States this week. What mass media fuss would there have been if Fiona Bruce or Raggy Omar had been locked up on a trip to Iran or Qatar, I wonder? Her detention's hardly been mentioned. And the Integrity Initiative. Our taxpayers' money being spent on pushing NATO war with Russia and smearing those who oppose it, such as Jeremy Corbyn. Lucy has further revelations about those behind this Integrity Initiative, the absolute opposite of what it says, a most Orwellian institution housed in a derelict mill in Scotland. Sounds like something from the Avengers. And the Yellow Jackets, we go to Toulouse last weekend to hear exactly what was going on there. Also in the Congo this week, the security forces have turned on the people once again. Today, the news that a doctor has been shot for attending injured demonstrators. How can the president be airlifted out by his gangster friends? Will this be happening in the next few days or weeks? Plus, virtually unreported, but there it is. It's a fact. Israel has admitted to supplying ISIS with weaponry. Its reasons are a little bit convoluted. That's all in the second hour after seven. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from the weatheroutlook.com. This tonight is lows of 3 degrees Celsius and wet this weekend. Highs around 7. Rain tomorrow. Cloudy, though, on Sunday without rain. Next week, highs of 7 Celsius, getting cooler as the week progresses. Some sunny spells and showers. Next weekend, the 26th and 27th of January, highs of 3 degrees Celsius and sunny spells. Sounds a little bit better next weekend. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review this week's news is Labour councillor for Hartcliffe and with you, Wood, former leader of Bristol City Council, Helen Holland. Hi, Helen. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hello, Tony.
First of all, this week, we've been hearing a lot about the full council meeting every month, around about the middle of the month on a Tuesday, and quite a reason I've also asked Chris Chalkley from the People's Republic of Stokes Croft to come in is because this whole business of the bear pit, the St. James Barton roundabout, there was a debate about that, about the bear. Now, I don't think you spoke in the debate, but anyway, what are your views on what's happening down there? A really contentious issue. There are some community groups that want to use it as a public art space, but the City Council's now decided that actually it's probably better for them to take back control of it because of the antisocial behaviour.
I haven't been involved myself in the decisions about the bear pit, but I think the one thing that's blatantly obvious is that you can't have a key space in the city centre that a lot of people don't feel comfortable in using. And so it's an area of huge change. Stokes Croft as well has changed a lot over the years. But the interesting thing about the council meeting on Tuesday, and by the way, Tony, we only have them about every 6 weeks now, so it's not as frequent as it used to be. But more or less the whole agenda on Tuesday was stuff that had come from residents in Bristol and from communities. So we had the petition about the bear at the bear pit. We had a petition about Hamilton House. We had a petition about glyphosate, the use of weed killer in the city. We had a lot of reports that came out of stuff that is of interest to the council. And however uncomfortable that meeting might have been, actually I always cheer internally when I see the public gallery and the overspill conference hall full of people, because that's what we want. We want a city where people engage in issues. And if it's sometimes uncomfortable, well, so be it, really.
Well, surely the idea is that the City Council should be sorting things out, and it's only when you are not sorting things out that the public gallery starts to fill up.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are people will want to have involvement in how the council sorts things out, won't they? And that's, I think, sometimes when we get it wrong, when we can't take people with us.
Well, we'll be hearing from Chris, who's sitting here, in just a minute. But before that, let's have a listen to one of the curators from the People's Republic for Stokes Croft, who was involved in something called the Bear Pit Improvement Group, which used to run it, which was set up by George Ferguson. You know, this is one of the issues. And maybe before we listen to Lisa, Helen, it almost seems as if this is something which was George Ferguson set up, and as the new Labour administration under Marvin Rees has come along, they've said, well, actually, we want to clear out George's projects out of the way. We don't like them.
Can I just interject, because the Bear Pit Improvement Group was not set up by George Ferguson. It was before his time, actually. Mm. It was over 7 years ago, and it was with your deputy, Simpkin.
Graham Sims.
Yeah. Was persuaded by Henry Shafto of the University of West of England Urban Design Department that the best thing that could happen to the bear pit was that it would be taken over by a community group and set up as a community action zone.
Okay, well, anyway, let's have a listen now to one of the curators down at PRSC who'd been looking after the bear pit up until about this time last year, but just over a year ago, Lisa Furness.
I'm Lisa Furness. I work for the People's Republic of Stokes Croft. On January 15th, the members of the community group, the Bear Pit Improvement Group, went up to City Hall to present a petition asking the council not to evict the community groups, community project, and the structures built for cultural activities to be removed from the bear pit. What we saw happen was that a large number of people stood up and spoke without actually acknowledging at all the petition that we were bringing to the council, which, having been signed by About 4,000 people in Bristol basically said that the community groups should have a chance to manage the Bear Pit's space. Our petition was either ignored or misrepresented, that facts were basically put forward to prove something when they proved the opposite, and that the entire thing felt more like a show trial than anything else, felt like an opportunity for a lot of people to express their own political agendas without really giving any kind of recourse to the discussion at hand. For example, one of our main points was that Bear Pit Improvement Group had the license to run events in the Bear Pit removed from us in 2017. And since then, there has been an increase in violence and antisocial behaviour and an increasing number of vulnerable and homeless people appearing in the Bear Pit. And reports of violence and antisocial behaviour have gone up in the Bear Pit. However, there was at no point during the debate was any reference made to the fact that Bristol City Council took back control of the Bear Pit in 2017. The arguments that were given for why the Bear Pit Improvement Group and the People's Republic have now been asked to remove all our facilities and infrastructure that we've built in the Bear Pit, the reasons that were given was that it's become more violent and it's become more dangerous in the last year, without any acknowledgement that Bristol City Council have been running the space for the last year and that we've had no say in anything that happened down there. In the full time that PRSC and Bear Pit Improvement Group were working, reports and instances of violence and antisocial behaviour were reduced in the Bear Pit, and you can see a clear correlation between Bristol City Council regaining control and an increase in antisocial behaviour. There was also no acknowledgement that the increasing number of homeless people in the Bear Pit may have something to do with the huge increase in homelessness over the course of the last few years. It was laid squarely at the feet of Bear Pit Improvement Group and People's Republic.
Well, we seem to have a lot of People's Republic of Stokescroft people around today. That was Lisa Furness. We've also got Chris Chalkley in the studio. But it's an interesting point she's making there, Helen, which is actually the council took back control of this in 2017. So the problems that we've seen since really are the council's responsibility, not the homeless or the Bear Pit Improvement Group.
Well, as I said, I haven't been closely involved with this issue, so I don't really want to comment because I don't want to, misinterpret the situation. But can I just go back to what I said earlier about the agenda being set by residents, which I welcome, but there is a frustration for people, I understand that, around that, because it's great that we have this mechanism where if you get 3,500 signatures on a petition, there's a council debate. But I think sometimes people, that means that they come with the expectation that they're going to hear a decision being made. But what doesn't happen on the day that you present the petition and you have the discussion about it, it doesn't come out with recommendations that are then agreed. That normally happens later. So there'll be a cabinet report as a result of this. And what I do hope is that those people who have the interests of the Bear Pit at heart will stay engaged with those discussions.
The backdrop of this is also death threats, isn't it? We've had Marvin Must Die actually painted on the pavement outside the Mayor Marvin Rees's house just last weekend, and also apparently death threats against Asher Craig as well. I mean, how's that been dealt with, you know, within the Labour group and within by the politicians? Not very pleasant.
It's appalling. I mean, there is no other word for it, and everybody needs to speak out against that. I don't think that you said it was the backdrop. I don't think that these two issues are necessarily related. But I think that, for me, it's really hard. I've spent a lot of my, and I've been around in the City Council for a long time, 28 years it'll be this year. I've spent a lot of that time encouraging people to think about standing to be a councillor, to get engaged in community politics, to get engaged in neighbourhood politics. the last thing people want to see is that if they do that and their name is out in, there in public at every level, whether they're being blogged about in a nasty, pernicious way, or whether the appalling things that we've seen this week at Marvin's home, you know, that isn't going to make an environment where people think, yeah, I'm going to speak up for my community.
Yeah, and as you said, you've been in on the council for a long time. I mean, this isn't the first time, is it? I can remember
maybe 10 years ago,
there was even a move where city councillors had to have their front doors replaced with fireproof front doors because of burning things being put through their letterboxes. I mean, this is going back a while, but I mean,
I don't remember that, but I've had incidences at my own home in the past, and those and other councillors did too on the same night, and those weren't made public. But I think that everybody's reaction, quite rightly, to this being public this week is that this cannot happen. You cannot have, you can disagree with people. You know, what's that expression? You know, I disagree with you, but I
defend to your death, defend, your right to say
defend
it.
To my death,
except
your
if
right
you're making,
to say it.
Except if you're making a death threat. Definitely
exactly.
Not.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. That I mean, you know, we can disagree with each other, but it should not get personal.
Taking a step back from all of this, what do you think is ultimately going to happen down there? I mean, we've seen some plans rolled out by Asher Craig. Do you think there's still space for public art in places like the Bear Pit and places close to the city centre?
Well, Bristol is known as a public art city, isn't it? You know, it's the Banksy legacy, if you like. I live in Ashton myself, so I'm surrounded by the public art from Upfest. Different people will have different opinions about it. I think that that a lot of people feel uncomfortable then when, you know, that public transport infrastructure, bus shelters, etc., are used as the canvas, if you like, for public art. But I think that one of the things about encouraging it is that it's then difficult to draw the line, isn't it, between what is a suitable space for public art and what isn't. So
I mean, some might
just
criticize
tagging everything. Yeah. Tagging bins, you know, that is not public art.
Some
is
might
it?
Say, Chris, that actually by having somewhere like the Bear Pit with all these sort of graffiti artists doing stuff down there actually encourages more graffiti and more criminal damage around the city. It's saying this is actually okay, go for it.
That's a difficult ball to pass to me. Some people will say that they do say that all of the time. I firmly believe that we need to have in our public spaces spaces where people have the right to express. Historically, in all cities, there has always been that. And the Bear Pit I've always seen as a space where voice from below could be heard.
Well, it was heard, wasn't it? Because right at the very start of all this, when the Cube was first taken down, there was an advertising hoarding, a kind of not the normal type of McDonald's ad, but it was saying that the City Council were not looking after our air quality, and that I think it was 20 or so people, they'd looked at the Friends of the Earth statistics, were dying every year because of air pollution. Now, that is actually quite an important statement to make, and that's now gone.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, the Cube. Actually, that was financed by European Green Capital money. PRSC received a £50,000 grant, and that Cube was built using European Green Capital money as a piece of artwork. And the idea behind that was that there could be voice in a city that's dominated by corporate advertising, that there would be a space for alternative voice to be heard. And what was interesting is that in Whitsun 2018, that Cube was removed. And according to the opinion of our solicitors, who we unfortunately have had to engage because of the impasse that has taken place between ourselves and Bristol City Council, that was removed without due legal process. So it continues to be a piece of performance art, if you like.
Let's have a listen now to the Deputy Mayor, Asher Craig, whose baby this project to change the Bear Pit and to remove the Bear Pit Improvement Group. It's her baby. So let's have a listen to what she had to say at the full council meeting this week.
For many years, the Bear Pit has been an unsafe, unwelcoming place that whilst meant to connect the city centre and Stokes Croft, as well as providing other pedestrian routes, became a no-go area which most people in Bristol were and are frightened and unwilling to use. This was and is unacceptable anywhere in Bristol. As a result, and in support of the ethos of community and citizen-managed spaces, the council gave control to the Bear Pit Improvement Group, with the specific remit to turn it into a safe, welcoming and creative space that would benefit all the people of Bristol. But sadly, the potential for a truly vibrant and exciting space has gone unrealised. Whilst the Bear Pit Improvement Group have been overseeing the space, there have been numerous robberies, countless attacks, the harassment of traders, regular open use of heroin, and the tragic deaths of homeless people taking spice. A 15-year-old boy was raped in the Bear Pit, and two women were slashed across the face by their pimp. The toilets were commandeered as a squat, then a drugs den, before an arson attack late last year. We took back control and installed CCTV. As a result, the police arrested someone living in a tent in the underpass with a samurai sword. Had we not done so, God only knows what might have happened.
Well, the period that Asher is talking about is mainly the period since the council took back control. No one should pretend that the Bear Pit was an easy area. Historically, it has been a no-go area between Stokes Croft and the shopping centre. It's always been the reserve of people who have nowhere else to go. So you have to think about where we started from. And in the period when the community group was running it, we had a vibrant place where tours would come to see the artwork, where there was performance taking place. And in fact, we feel as if what happened in November 2016 is that the council started to pull the legs off the body that was the Bear Pit Improvement Group.
So where are you going to go next? I mean, obviously, you've got a whole collection of artists and people like that that want to do something. So are you going to move, do you think?
Well, everything moves. That is absolutely the case. However, with the Bear Pit, you know, it's clear that there has to be a resolution. And if the mayor's office is adamant about removing all of the artworks from this area, then we're not in a position to fight that, except that the one thing that we must do is preserve that which is of community value. So we have, what is extraordinary to me is that the council has said that we must remove all our structures. We received a legal document 3 months ago with no discussion at all.
Unsigned, I might add.
Unsigned.
It wasn't actually signed. The legal documents weren't signed. They were
unsigned.
Signed. They were signed with a signature style writing of Bristol City yes. Council, which I found a bit strange.
And incorrectly addressed to the wrong groups. With absolutely no discussion, telling us that we must remove all of the stuff by January the 14th. And so that would involve massive expense, and so what the message from that would be that community groups that you spoke about, Helen, about being encouraged to do things in the same way as council officers should be encouraged to do things, would be actually punished for their attempts to help in public space. It's unfair. So we are now in a situation where it seems sensible that no public structures should be removed. These structures were paid for by public money and by charity until there is a firm and solid plan. And the circle is nothing at this stage more than a drawing on an architect's paper.
So the circle you're referring to is Asher's
proposed development. There is absolutely nothing apart from some drawings. And so we're being asked to remove a bear sculpture that was paid for by the Arts Council, a performance stage that has only really been used once, and that was used by 125 Charity, who look after prostitution, help to relieve that, and storage space from which markets and community activities could take place. So we're being asked to remove them at our expense, while there is nothing in place to to go in there, and this is part of an ongoing process. Back last year, all of the walls, one of which had Deeds Not Words, which was the in the year of the celebration of 100 years of universal suffrage, was painted out and painted brown by Bristol City Council's Bristol Waste.
Let's just put this to Helen.
Had nothing to do with this.
I know, but what do you make of what Chris is saying there? It does sound kind of reasonable that, you know, until there's something firm going to happen, let's just leave things as they are and allow some sort of activities to continue.
Well, as I've said, I haven't been involved, and Chris has said I haven't been involved with it. And especially if there are legal cases pending, then I really don't want to stray into it.
Okay.
What I hope is that the Bear Pit becomes a safe and welcoming and, yes, idiosyncratic, quirky space. All the things that we say that Bristol is, you know, famous for, we want to kind of replicate.
Hang on, Chris, replicate that in
communities.
What about the wider point, though, that this is not necessarily going to persuade community groups to get involved with the city council if they're then told, you're going to have to pay the expenses for this, we've decided we've had enough of it, and you've got to pay however many thousands of pounds to clear everything up?
I think that that's part of the legal argument, and so, as I say,
maybe we better tiptoe anyway. Over to you, Chris.
Yeah, it's clear that, you know, if you think about it, what we wanted to do was, at the beginning, when Graham Sims, we were going to produce something completely extraordinary as an experiment. He said it was a community action zone, and we don't know what that is yet. And our feeling is that that hasn't really been backed properly.
Anyway, let's have a listen now to Asher Craig again, the Deputy Mayor, whose baby this project, The Circle, to replace the Bear Pit, is at the end of her speech she did on Tuesday.
I want the people of Bristol to know that in seeking to create safe spaces for our citizens, we will not be swayed by threats. In championing the values of inclusion, we will not accept being singled out and subjected to hate. And in doing our duty by working to build a city that is prosperous and hopeful, we will not be silenced by those whose sole purpose is to peddle fear. Bristol deserves better. We deserve better. People who engage in this sort of behaviour should not in any way be connected to the control and management of public spaces in Bristol. It is the responsibility of this chamber to ensure that they are not allowed to have influence and that the public spaces in Bristol are developed and managed for the benefit of all the city's people. Not everybody chooses this approach, and where there is a reasonable voice with an offer and dedication to collaboration and discussion, I am committed to listening to all voices in the city who agree that the Bear Pit has the potential to become a much safer, vibrant and welcoming gateway to the city. To achieve these ends, we must resume control and management of the Bear Pit and turn it into the centrepiece of our city that it should be and that all the people of Bristol deserve. So, in closing, the Bear Pit belongs to the city, to all of its citizens, not just a few. We intend to ensure that this area of Bristol is safe for everyone. This ambition requires us all to make our contributions in order to see progressive change. And I am confident that we can stand together on this and turn it into the centrepiece of our city that it should be and that all the people of Bristol deserve. Thank you.
Well, 4,000 people from Bristol did make a judgment about the Bear Pit when they signed the petition to retain what was there. And in fact, all of the surveys that I've done down in the Bear Pit have all shown a massive interest in the arts and in the approach that we took to that space. A low-cost approach. You know, what we're talking about... and I absolutely agree that we need to spread widely the consultation. In fact, I think the proposal, the Circle proposal, has had no consultation whatsoever and is nothing more than, as it stands, a pipe dream.
What Asher there is implying is that the death threats were from Bear Pit people. She's definitely connecting the two issues.
Well, I didn't.
Don't you think so?
No, I didn't hear that. I hope that, you know, what Asher has said, and I know from other projects that Asher is very much involved with, is that
She will want to get people who want to move to a positive outcome together, and she will want to engage with people. And I just think that polarising it and making that connection is wrong, if you don't mind me saying so, Tony.
Well, I thought actually it was Ash that was doing that, and I was just reflecting what she was doing. But anyway, Chris.
We have to make it quite clear that death threats are completely unacceptable, and PRSC has made a public statement to that effect.
So where do we go from here? Do you think it's going to be... Are you going to continue to do any sort of activities down there, do you think, Chris, or not?
Well, currently the free shop is running out of one of the containers there. It's
just to explain what it is, it's a place where you can go and get clothes for free. Basically, it's like a charity shop, but you don't have to pay.
Yeah.
Also, I know there's a lot... There's clothes, there's children's clothes, that sort of thing, and books, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, to sum up, what I think should happen is that we should... The first thing would be to revisit the idea of community organisation, and if the council doesn't think that the Bear Pit Improvement Group is that organisation, which is current is now defunct,
you
in
might
any
have to
case,
do a windscale,
then
change your
then,
name.
Then actually, what I'd always envisaged that we would do is have a food offering that would be directly related to the problems that were there. So, for example, a Skipton, a free pay what you can type restaurant, which would make absolute sense for that space. The food offering could have some element of food bank, perhaps with organisations like Fair Share, which would be great. I think we should absolutely have 24-hour public toilets in that space, because in Stokescroft, I spoke to Andrew, the Bristol Waste Cleaner. He tells me that he cleans up five, on average, human stools a day. You know, the Bear Pit actually could be...
I'll just put this to Helen. It's not the nicest of subjects, but don't you think that was part of the problem there, is closing the public toilets?
Well, the public toilets, as they were, I'm not talking about the Bear Pit ones necessarily, because I haven't been in those for a long, long time. But some of the public toilets that I had visited before the decision was made to close them as part of the budget cuts... coming up for 2 years ago now, isn't it? Is that actually anybody in their, right mind would not want to use them. I spoke to a woman who'd tried to find a clean space to lay her baby down on the floor to change the baby in one of the public toilets, and they were disgusting. The project that there is now, actually, as I understand it, although this isn't true across all communities, certainly not in the one that I represent, but if you look in Bedminster, for example, by encouraging some of the shops and cafes to allow people to use their toilets, that there's actually more availability of public toilets in some of those places than there was before.
I mean, what about
that doesn't work for street people, Helen.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work for street people, and those are the people who most need those kinds of services.
I mean, I would have thought that's basically what we pay our council tax for, make sure that there's some public toilets at least in the city centre. Yeah, I mean, if they're not in the city centre, this is what you're going to get. You're just going to get people going any old way.
Yeah, and just coming back to the vision, Tony, during the period when there was more activity down there, then there was more what we call passive surveillance, which meant that there was no need for CCTV, and crime did fall. And when you're engaging with street people, then, and they feel part of the space, then there isn't such a problem. And we were gradually moving towards that scenario when the plug was pulled and there was a schism between the council and the traders and the Bear Pit Improvement Group.
Anyway, and Chris, it's now time, I'm afraid, for you to go back to the drawing board with the Bear Pit and start a new consultation with Asher Craig. Maybe change your name. Don't call yourself Bear Pit Improvement Group. Call yourself something else and see what you can manage to achieve.
Well, actually, the scenario, Tony, is that why would we want to play with people who have basically pulled the legs off our organisation?
Good question.
But the thing about having a petition at council is that it's up there now, isn't it? Everybody knows.
Everybody.
A lot more people know about it. And normally there will be a report that follows a petition. And so...
councillors, your local councillors, they will follow that up.
And you know, actually, this is at the heart of the debate of the future of our city, because, you know, even Bristol City Council's own reports say that the avant-garde, the messy, the difficult is absolutely essential to the growing part of the city. And so, you know, actually what we've seen is that surreptitiously and very quietly, the Bear Pit has been moved into the Broadmead Business Improvement District in November 2017 without anybody being told. And that this is, you know, it's, do we want to go this way or do we want to go that way? Do we want an interesting, vibrant city with alternative culture, or do we want corporate Bristol?
Yes, we do, but not at the Bear Pit. Apparently, that's the message. Anyway, we'll have to leave it there. And let's talk now with Helen about something called the Bristol One City Plan. I wonder if, Helen, you can give us a little explanation as to what this is. This is something which was revealed at the weekend, and it includes drone delivery and 16-year-olds being given the vote.
Well, I think it's a pity, personally, that the drone delivery thing seemed to be the bit that some media outlets landed on as being what this plan was about. I think that what Bristol has done, what Marvin has led in delivering the city plan, has been an amazing amount of work that has engaged with a lot of partners and stakeholders and people around the city. And the great aim here is that instead of having hundreds of plans and every organisation having their plan, the nub of it is that you look at those things together and you agree on what the vision is for the city. And in this case, it moves forward to 2050, which, as they say, sounds a hell of a long time away. But babies who are being born now are only going to be 32 in 2050. So it's not that long away in that sense. But you get those organisations to both look at the shared ambition of the city and to say about their strategic plans, what is it that we can produce that's going to get us all to that place? And I think that there are some fantastic ideas within the city plan. Some of them you might think are a bit more wacky, you know, your parcels being delivered by drones. But I think a lot of people wouldn't disagree with the idea of 16-year-olds being given the vote. And certainly at the launch of the city plan, at the city plan gathering a week ago today, one of the things that was really, really, I thought, very moving was that some of the asks that are in the city plan were brought to life by people advocating for them with a 2-minute pitch, and then the attendees voted on which was the priority. And things like dealing with period poverty, on getting more foster carers in the city, all of those things were discussed. And some of the people that I was sitting near some business people in the city, they hadn't thought about those as big issues in the past, and it brought them to their attention and got them to make offers about how they could help solve them.
Now, you talk about the business people that were invited along to this launch. There are various criticisms of the fact that apparently no opposition councillors, Green, Tory or Lib Dem, were invited along to the Mayor's One City Plan launch. It's supposed to be for city leaders, and go figure that out, says Rob Breyer, who used to be a Green councillor in the city. Why is that? So, I mean, if this is a launch of something which is supposed to bring everyone together, so how come so many... I mean, it seems to have been politicised. So this is just the Labour political leadership and none of the other politicians are involved at all, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know how the invitation list was arrived at, but what I do know is that in the work that has led to the city plan being put down on paper, and that's been a huge task because there have been literally hundreds and almost probably thousands of post-it notes at all sorts of gatherings that have led up to this. There have been members of the opposition parties have been at those events, backbench councillors, the MPs, all sorts of people with you know, political backgrounds, if you like, or political roles, have been engaged in those, and so their work will be, they will be able to see stuff in the city plan are ideas from what they said.
Charlie Bolton, who's still a Green councillor, he's one of Bristol's first Green councillors, actually tweeted, centralised control and all about Labour has always been their way in my experience. I just think it's quite important to make sure that other political leaders and councillors are on board. I mean, if this is our money you're spending.
There are ways and ways of doing it, aren't there? One of the things is that the event, as I understand it, was very oversubscribed, so that might have been part of the decision that was made. But I do think that it's a nonsense, actually, to say, as Charlie has, that you look at the plan and it's a Labour plan. You look at that plan and there's all sorts of things in there, and there's no way. And the idea of it, and certainly this is something that Marvin said, is that that plan transcends political differences. And if it's going to be worth anything, you spoke earlier, I don't think you were right, by the way, but you said, you know, that the Bear Pit plan had been ripped up because some people thought it was George Ferguson's. I mean, one of the mistakes that people make is that kind of stop-start politics, isn't it? Oh, that was the old administration. We've got to get rid of that. We're going to do something new. Actually, if the city plan is going to survive till 2050, obviously it won't be in the form it's in now. It'll carry on growing because it's organic. You know, we need future administrations not to go, oh, that was the last lot, I'm going to do something different.
Well, Ruth Hecht makes probably more important point. She says, Bristol One City Plan, a strategy to 2050. I see only one reference to the arts, culture, heritage and museums and libraries. That is to say the Colston Hall reopening. And she says that's shameful.
Yeah, if you follow that Twitter conversation, because I saw Ruth's tweet when she tweeted it, that actually then she had another look at it and she read it in detail and she found that there was more.
Oh yes, there was, you're more right. Actually, I must quote, this has popped up since I saw that, just had a closer look, it was late at night the first time, and there are some references to culture but very few. Could be more in relation, for example, to health and well-being and the economy, etc. Just go through some of the bullet points from the One City Plan. Bristol to Cardiff high-speed, high-frequency rail link, although I don't know how much Bristol City Council is going to be able to fund that or have much to do with it. High-speed rail links connecting Bristol with other cities. The mass transit system completed in the 2030s. Bristol Bath, Bristol Airport and the North and East Fringe. Now, is that the underground? You're not sure?
I think the mass transit system is, yes.
Congestion times have been cut because of traffic management plan. Is that the congestion charge?
Who knows?
I think that's what they want more than anything. Well, Rubbing their hands.
I don't know. I don't know that the whole thing about congestion isn't just the journey times, is it? It's also about quality of life and it's also about air quality, which is a very important topic that we just touched about the Bear Pit.
Scary things about this is that it's penalising people with older cars. So if you've got you're rich, you've got a nice brand new car, you don't pay a lot of these kinds of, I mean, they've introduced this environmental tax in London now. Whereas if you've got an old banger, you're hit harder. So this is a regressive tax.
The issue for me is that the better public transport is, the more it's going to serve the people and communities, isn't it? And hopefully, as public transport gets better, and I'm a great advocate of public transport, I use it all the time, I've used it to get here this evening, the better it is, the more reliable it is, the cheaper it is, the more people use it, the more people think that there is an alternative
now,
to using
their car.
I've been
trying to have a dialogue with Tim Bowles, the Metro Mayor, about franchising and giving the City Council more control about routes. He's now refused to come on the programme to talk about it. Maybe I should have just said I was going to talk about something else, but you know me, I'm quite upfront. Look, we're going to talk about that, Tim. I got a formal letter, and this is after 3 months of about 15 or 20 emails backwards and forwards with the Metro Mayor's office, and he's now said, no, I'm not talking about it, I'm not coming. So what about this whole business? I mean, it seems that he's particularly sensitive about being asked and questioned about franchising.
I think that for me, again, and you know, way back in ancient history, I had the transport portfolio, and it's something that I'm still very interested in. But what's the point of creating Metro Mayors, combined authorities, unless you're going to use the powers that are available to you? And I think that, you know, people used to say to us when, you know, myself and other people have this portfolio, or we need the same powers that Transport for London has got. Well, in theory, if we took the right measures, those powers are available to us. And you don't see, frankly, the other Metro mayors, if you think about Andy Burnham in Greater Manchester, Andy Street in the West Midlands, you don't see them being shy about exercising the powers that they've got. And I think to have more control over buses is something that is an essential part of delivering that better public transport that we were talking about.
That's maybe that's the one big question he doesn't want to answer, because maybe he's too close to the bus operating companies who are lobbying him and more successful at lobbying him to keep control of where the routes go and the fares and this sort of thing, rather closer than the councillors are. Maybe. That finally, a virtual and augmented...
I thought you said we were going to talk about Brexit.
We are, yeah, we are, in a minute. Virtual and augmented... I'm just running through this list of bullet points on the Bristol One City Plan. Throughout virtual and augmented realities reduce the need to travel. So I suppose this is the idea of people working more from home. On Brexit, I did a little bit of research, Helen. I think one of the things that I find fascinating is looking at how many people actually turn out to vote in elections, because it gives you an idea of whether they think there's any point. Brexit was quite high, wasn't it?
It was quite high. And you know, the reason why that was that people were told that their vote would matter. And, you know, what the 2.5 years since that has shown is that it wasn't as easy as yes, let's leave, and it all happened the next day. We've in this ridiculous situation now with this complete impasse, and all of a sudden, you know, we're going to have a plan B by Monday. Well, is there anybody who seriously believes that there's going to be a plan B by Monday that Parliament can coalesce around?
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? Because Parliament is actually opposed to Brexit, isn't it?
But for me, the issue is this one, that and I've been in a meeting this morning that's talked with other South West councils about the impact on local authorities, because so much of what local authorities do will be impacted by a no deal Brexit. And if you
don't
want to,
you as a councillor just have to do what you're told by the referendum? If the people say got to do it.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying is that we're waiting for Parliament to give some guidance about what actions local authorities need to take on a whole raft of things. I mean, just think for a minute about, for example, in my own portfolio now, adult social care. We know that there are workforce shortages in health and social care. So at the moment, across the CCG area, so Bristol, North Somerset and South Gloucestershire, health service running with about an 11% vacancy or turnover rate.
Shouldn't they be upping their wages then?
Hang on. Can I finish this point? And we know that 9% of the workforce are EU nationals. Well, those people don't even know what's going to be happening to them by the end of March. Now, Marvin has agreed, and the City Council has agreed, that we are going to pay the registration fee for the EU nationals who work for the City Council. So there's about 300 EU nationals who work within our own organisation. And we know that people have been made to feel very uncomfortable. Do we still want them to be here? Not we, the City Council, does the UK. And I think we're in uncharted waters. But the fact that there's no guidance coming down to local government is ridiculous. And certainly the meeting that I was at this morning, and it was a cross-party meeting, we've all agreed to write to the minister and saying, you have got to come out with some concrete advice to local authorities.
So, Helen, do you think there's going to be a second referendum?
Personally, I don't think that there will
be. Do you think it's a good idea or not?
I think you said yourself people were told their vote was going to count, they've made the decision and Parliament hasn't been able to agree about how they execute that decision.
Anyway,
but one of the problems there is that we know that some of the people that, you know, Can politicians vote positively for something where they know the effect is going to be very detrimental?
Good question. Anyway, your former leader, Prime Minister Tony Blair, has been on the radio this week calling for a second referendum.
I don't think there's a majority in Parliament for any form of Brexit. And we've got different versions of Brexit on offer. So I don't think it's unreasonable to go to say, look, in those circumstances, we're best to go back to the people. I think the important thing is to realise why it's gone down in flames. And, you know, I understand there's a huge desire with the public who say, we voted for it. Why don't you get on with it? Just get the job done. What are you guys still squabbling about? And the truth is, the reason why her deal went down is because MPs studied the detail and they realised it was a bad deal. And it is a bad deal. It's a bad deal for many different reasons. But the principal one is that despite the undertaking that was given, that the future relationship with Europe would be clear, the future relationship with Europe is not clear. And even the cabinet is divided about what it should be. And the reason people voted the deal down was because to leave in those circumstances is actually dangerous for the country.
I agree with much of what he said in terms of the position that we find ourselves in. I'm afraid I do not agree with him on the conclusion that that leads to a second referendum. He's right, I think, that there won't be able to be any agreement in Parliament. Whether that means that there will be a second vote, not a referendum, on deal or no deal, if you see what I mean. Although the deal may have changed a bit by then if Plan B is worth any paper that it's written on.
I mean, isn't there a certain amount of brinksmanship going on here, both by the EU and by Theresa May? They're saying, well, you're going to have to agree, and isn't this like a bit like playing poker?
I would kind of tend to agree with that, except that the 27 countries have shown remarkable unanimity, haven't they? And so if some of the other countries were beginning to peel off and saying, perhaps they are behind the scenes, oh, go on, let's concede a little bit more, I might agree with you. But the fact that they are absolutely rock solid makes me think that that there isn't much room for manoeuvre.
Well, the Labour leadership has said that in order to talk to Theresa May, they're going to have to take no deal off the table. Do you think that's the right thing to do? I certainly think,
and I would advise you to have a look at it, and your listeners to have a look at it. Have a look at the no deal report that went to our scrutiny management, overview and scrutiny management last night, Thursday night, and you'll see some of the risks around the impact of no deal
on
Bristol.
Okay, put a link up to that on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, so you can have a good old scrutinise of that over the weekend, folks.
Exactly. And I just think that, no deal is right. And let's face it, Jeremy Corbyn isn't the only one who's said that. So some of the other leaders, although they went to the talks, they said that that was their position.
OK, let's hear from Jeremy now at talking to Theresa May at Prime Minister's Questions on this topic this week.
Jeremy Corbyn! The Prime Minister hasn't answered on a customs union, hasn't answered on no deal, and continues to spend $4.2 billion of public money on a no deal scenario. Yeah. Can't she understand? Yesterday the House rejected her deal. She needs to come up with something different than that. But, Mr. Speaker, it's not just on Brexit that this government is failing. 4 million working people are living in poverty. 500,000 more children in poverty compared to 2010. The Roundtree Foundation confirms in-work poverty is rising faster than the overall employment rate. With poverty rising, can the Prime Minister tell us when we can expect it to fall for the time she remains in office?
Can I tell the Right Honourable Gentleman what is happening? We now see 1 million fewer people in absolute poverty. Under that, That is a record low. We see 300,000 fewer children in absolute poverty. That is a record low. We see a record low in the number of children living in workerless households. And income inequality, lower than at any point under the last Labour government. That's Conservatives delivering for the people of this country. What would we see from the Labour Party? £1,000 billion more in borrowing and taxes, the equivalent of £35,000 for every household in this country. That's Labour failing to deliver for working people, because working people always pay the price of the Labour Party.
Well, you have to wonder where those statistics come from, because it doesn't feel like that on the street in the communities, does it? I was at a school governor's meeting yesterday and hearing about, you know, children coming to school hungry, can't work because they're so hungry, their parents can't afford to put food on the table.
Well, there's a real problem. In work poverty, yeah. That means that there's no point in getting a job, because you're going to still be just as poor as if you were on benefits. That's actually tragic.
And this is a failing of universal credit, isn't it? And the appalling that we're so dependent on food banks now for so many people, including a lot of people who are in work. But I come back to the point, Tony, that the you know, the burden of this is going to fall on the shoulders of local government, not just Bristol. All local authorities.
Which the government is defunding. So they're taking all the money away from you and telling you to do more.
One of the things that we're saying in this cross-party letter that's going to the minister about the no-deal scenario that after the Brexit discussions that I was in this morning is that they need to stop the cuts to the revenue support grant at least until we have seen what the impact of Brexit is.
Well, fingers crossed with this lot. Anyway, we're going to listen now finally to a little clip from BBC Question Time last night, where no deal being taken off the table by Jeremy Corbyn, that's his demand anyway, was poo-pooed, and there was an absolute roar in support of a no deal. So that was fascinating. Let's have a listen to that now.
By leaving no deal on the table, what that ultimately does, it's sort of scaring the EU to come back to the table. By taking that off the table, like Diane's just said there, we may as well just hand them everything.
Of course.
Right now, there is no way. There is no way they're going to come back to the table. No way.
The man in the red jacket.
Like you said, most of Parliament is now do not favour no deal. Isn't that the problem, that all the voters favour no deal and the parliamentarians don't?
Absolutely. Listen.
The original question, yeah. Is there any deal that can achieve a parliamentary majority, Isabel?
Well, the answer, look, I can save everybody a lot of time here. The short answer is no, there isn't, and that is why it seems to me the only option for Theresa May now, and I'm going to admit that it is a suboptimal position, is to walk away. That is all she can do.
So to leave
point.
With no deal?
Yes, absolutely, because there isn't an alternative.
The audience, someone who supports her, because that was a massive cheer there. Yeah, you stuck your hand up so quickly. Yeah,
well, I think it's quite obvious that the European Union are playing a really good game of poker here. We've played our hand out in public. They've done all their negotiations behind closed doors. They've been shoulder to shoulder, and we haven't. I think if we're prepared to walk away now, Angela Merkel needs to sell 850,000 cars to this country, and she's got 2 million jobs at stake. That phone will be ringing pretty quickly if we walk away.
Well, there's a big cheer goes up there in the audience, Helen, for a no deal. They're saying, well, look, you can't take that off the table. That's your main bargaining chip.
But the Question Time audience, I know that they say that they try hard to make it representative, but that isn't the whole of the British people, is it? And I do not think, when people start realising what the implications of no deal are, that is what people want.
Time now then for the Murdoch News at 7 o'clock. Thanks to our guest, Labour councillor for
Hartcliffe and Withywood. Used to be Whitchurch Park.
And also to, thanks very much also to Chris Chalkley from the People's Republic of Stokes Croft. Join us after the US-owned Comcast News. That's the Sky News. This as we spread our wings around the world.
BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.